950, the progressive voice of Minnesota on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Hopefully you enjoyed those Twins games over the weekend while you could, because I think very shortly we're not going to be having any more baseball. Now, the reason why I'm starting off the show talking about baseball and sports yet again is that I think in a few weeks this could have much more an effect on the broader economy. First, the news with baseball. So, if you don't follow the sport very closely, the Miami Marlins are, of course, a Major League Baseball team. And over the weekend, it was discovered that nearly half their roster tested positive for COVID-19. In fact, they have now canceled their game that was scheduled to be played tonight. And over the weekend, they were playing at the Philadelphia Phillies. And of course, they used the visitors' clubhouse at Philadelphia. And now the Yankees are the next team to go to Philadelphia. They've had to cancel that game since the Marlins just used the road locker room in Philadelphia. So two games have already been postponed. But wow, if you get a major league team that has half their roster test positive for the coronavirus, that leads me to believe we're probably not going to have baseball for a very long time. And I think this is important because if you remember back to late February and early March when we were getting early reports of COVID-19, nobody really started to take it very seriously until two events occurred. One would be Tom Hanks testing positive for the coronavirus, and the other one was when the NBA announced that they were suspending their entire season. That really caught the attention, I think, of the broader national media talking about how big a deal this is. And I think a similar type of effect could happen if all of a sudden we have Major League Baseball start their season and then all of a sudden announce, we're not going to be playing baseball anymore. Have any thoughts on that, Patrick? Are you in the same boat thinking like back in March, that was a real catalyst when the NBA announced that we're suspending our season? That really seemed to catch everyone's attention. And I wonder if the same thing could happen with Major League Baseball. I'm of the opinion they're not playing much longer. I mean, if one team can have half their roster test positive for the virus in just a weekend, it's only a matter of time before this happens to other teams.
Yeah, and I think the cherry on top of what you were saying was when March Madness was canceled shortly after the NBA suspended their season. But now, looking over to those other two winter sports, particularly the NBA, and you kind of have some little pokes in the bubble, as they call it. The bubble is where they've isolated the players for their restart, but you have a lot of people who've had to leave for various reasons and come back, and they don't have to quarantine for very long before they're allowed to rejoin their teammates. So I don't know if there's going to be a point where somebody who had to leave for a family emergency will bring it back with them accidentally.
Yeah, and with that bubble situation, you would think all it would take would be one small cluster of cases to really have that thing spread like wildfire in those bubble types of situations that you're seeing with other sports like soccer, basketball, and the NHL, who are doing the bubble style as opposed to Major League Baseball, who's just having teams travel like normal. And by the way, the NFL is supposedly going to use this same system as Major League Baseball, where teams are not going to be in a bubble. They're going to play in their home cities, looking like in empty stadiums. But I'm sure they're watching this situation very closely. And if we get to a point where the NFL cancels this season, that's going to be like Armageddon, not just to the sporting public, but I think to the broader national public if you run into that type of situation. So, yeah, it's kind of sad to say that it takes a situation where a sport has to cancel its season for people to really start taking these things seriously. But I think that is the case where people might sit there and look at things and say, well, this isn't affecting me personally, and the coronavirus is the coronavirus, but all of a sudden you see a major sports league cancel your season, then you're thinking, well, maybe I do need to take this a little bit more seriously. That's what I thought happened in March, and I think we're on the verge of having something similar happen in the next couple weeks, if not sooner. Now, Patrick, you just heard the report. I think you said MLB has announced they are not canceling their season yet. They're still planning on playing, correct?
That's correct. It sounds like no changes at all is what my understanding is.
So enjoy those sports while you can. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So on the more political side of the news today, coming up, we're going to be talking about Ivanka Trump making a stop in Minnesota. She was in Duluth earlier this morning, and I believe now is either in Bloomington or on her way to Bloomington. We'll be going through what she talked about and what it means and who she appeared with. We'll have some news from the state legislature, an update on what's happening with the defund the police movement in Minneapolis, and how the Charter Commission could end up being kind of a thorn in the side of trying to get the defund the police movement to actually go through. And we'll have some national news on what's happening with the stimulus. But first, I want to start off with something and kind of play devil's advocate and go back to a conversation I had on Friday with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. If you missed my show on Friday, I spent probably about the second half of the show with our national political analyst, David Schultz, talking about whether 2016 is similar to what's happening in 2020. You can go back and listen to the podcast over at am950radio.com. And we largely came to the conclusion that 2020 is, of course, a much different cycle than 2016. But one of the nuggets David threw in there early in our conversation was saying that the polls were actually right in 2016. And I've thought that for a while myself, just kind of anecdotally, but I went through and did some research with the 2016 polls, and it turns out they were correct. Yeah, that goes against the kind of common sense we've heard since 2016 with different people saying, oh, well, look at how wrong the polls were. Everyone predicted Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And of course, Donald Trump ended up winning the election. And while it's true that many prognosticators said that Hillary Clinton had like a 95% chance of winning, or I think the New York Times infamously predicted that she had like a 97% chance of winning, if you really go through and look at the polling data, the data was there showing that Trump had a very good chance to win in 2016. Now, in just a second, I'll go through why I'm talking about this and compare it to 2020. But I do want to go back in time to 2016 and explain how the polls were actually correct. No, they weren't wrong. The data was there showing that Trump had a very good chance of winning in 16. So the first thing to check out is Real Clear Politics. They, of course, are a poll aggregator where they basically average all of the different polls, and then they put together a nice little chart showing what the average of all the polls has, where they show where the candidates stand according to the average of all the polls that they do, in other words. So if you look at Real Clear Politics of 2016, they chart how the national polls look of Clinton versus Trump. They chart this out, and it's really interesting to look at, because if you start in April, when Hillary Clinton had the Democratic nomination wrapped up and Donald Trump had the Republican nomination also sewed up, when you look at April, Hillary Clinton had approximately an average lead of about 10 percentage points. But then if you fast forward to around Memorial Day, late May, early June, you can see that her lead fades and the race basically becomes tied by early June. Then as time passes, once we head into later June and into July, her lead expands again, upwards of about 7 or 8 percentage points. But then, late July, early August, the lead narrows again, and even for a couple days, Trump has the lead in the national polls. That occurs in early August. But then as that month goes on, Hillary expands her lead yet again up until around Labor Day, when again, the national polling average narrows. and it stays that way for a little while until about the middle of October, when, if you remember correctly, that would be when the Access Hollywood tape came out. And once that came out, that again had Hillary expanding her lead over Trump to about 8 percentage points. But just a couple of weeks later, you can see this again in the national polling average. The race narrows one more time, right around when the Comey letter comes out. And ultimately, on Election Day, the polling average had Hillary Clinton ahead in the national popular vote by about 3 percentage points. Turns out she won the popular vote by 2.1 percentage points. So she actually, or so the polls actually did largely get the national vote correct. Now, there's another thing to look at as well. As I was talking about looking at that polling average, you can see how fluid that race was, where you can see at different points Hillary Clinton had a large lead over Donald Trump, but there were three or four instances during 2016 where that lead narrowed to basically nothing, or even occasionally having Donald Trump slightly ahead. Which, if you think about it, that basically shows that we had a segment of the voting base that was kind of going back and forth on whether they were going to support Hillary or whether they were going to support Trump. They were kind of independent right-leaners, as I would kind of call them, that probably were normally Republican voters but were uncomfortable with the tweets of Donald Trump. So they went back and forth over the summer. And ultimately, towards the end of the election cycle, as we saw, they decided to go home to the Republican Party at just a big enough margin to give him a chance of winning the Electoral College. So that's at least what we can look at in terms of the national popular vote. Now, of course, you might be sitting there thinking, well, the election is decided by the Electoral College and goes state by state. But even the state by state polls largely got things correct in 2016. Let's look at swing state presidential polls. In Florida, which is the largest of the swing states, the average of the final three polls had Trump ahead by 0.3 percentage points. He won the state by 1.2 points, so they pretty much got that one right. Ohio's last poll gave Trump a 7-point lead. He ended up winning by 8.1 points. The average of the final three polls in Pennsylvania only had Clinton leading by a single percentage point, with the very last poll taken even having Trump up by a point. What was the final result? Trump, of course, won the state by 0.7 percentage points. So they were largely right in Pennsylvania. How about Michigan? The final two polls had Clinton ahead by just an average of 1.5 points. In fact, the last one gave Trump a 2-point lead. He ended up winning the state by 0.2 points. And one final example, North Carolina, that had Trump ahead by 0.5 points, according to the polling average. He won it by a little bit more of a robust 3.7 percentage points. So even though some of the earlier state polls largely gave her a bigger lead, Hillary Clinton, you can look at those final few polls that were showing that the race was narrowing. So yeah, the popular trope you often hear is that, well, the polls were wrong in 2016 and they were biased against Donald Trump. If you really go through and look at the data, the polling was correct. We had the data showing that Donald Trump, while not a favorite, had a very clear path towards winning that election. I think what people get caught up in is they go back and look at some of the earlier polls that took place in like October and September when it was Clinton with a bigger lead. But we can see that race narrowing in the final few days of November and also in late October. Now, here's how I want to relate this to 2020. Now, remember what I talked about in 2016. We had a very fluid race where we had Hillary Clinton opening up a big lead, then losing the lead, opening up a big lead, then losing the lead. What are we seeing in 2020? It's an entirely different dynamic. Again, if you look at the Real Clear Politics polling average of 2020, Joe Biden has a lead that's been anywhere from 4 to 10 percentage points. He's never led by less than 4 percentage points. In fact, right now, the polling average gives him an 8-point lead, which makes him a substantial favorite to win over Donald Trump this fall. That doesn't mean he is going to win, because, of course, The election is decided by the Electoral College. And as I've seen from different pollsters and prognosticators and experts on the Electoral College, there are scenarios where you could have a candidate lose the popular vote, the national popular vote, by like 4 or even 5 percentage points and still carry the Electoral College. And the floor of Biden's lead has been 4 percentage points, which means it's right on that border where it is conceivable that Trump could win the Electoral College but lose the popular vote by an even wider margin in 2016. So the reason, again, why I'm pointing this out is that this is a very different race than 2016. And keep in mind, the polls were right in 16, and they're probably right this year. And even though it does show right now Biden with a very big lead, if you look at the trend, as I brought up, there have been a few instances where that polling average has dropped to about 4 percentage points, which definitely would put Trump in range to still lose the popular vote, but win the Electoral College. And the other final thing I'll point out with this is that when you look at polls, don't just look at an individual poll or even the one-day polling average. Go through and look at the trend. I think a lot of people missed back in 2016 just how fluid that race was, with how often the thing shifted from Hillary having a big lead to the race basically going even. Here in 2020, when we look at the trends, we're not seeing that. We're seeing that Biden lead go anywhere from 4 to 10 percentage points. In fact, for about the past 2 months, he's been having at least an 8 percentage point lead. Now, that doesn't mean if you're someone who supports Joe Biden or someone who wants Donald Trump out of office that you should just be sitting tight and knowing that everything is going to go well from you, because it only takes a small shift in that polling average to put Trump back in that range where he could still lose the popular vote but win the Electoral College. If he starts getting that polling average down to only trailing by about 4 or 5 percentage points, then he's still very much in position to win re-election. But as of now, he's not there, but it won't take much of a shift for him to move back towards having a chance to win. So just want to point that out there and kind of go against the trope we often hear saying that 2016 polls were wrong. No, go back and actually look at the data. The 2016 polls were right. We had the data showing that Trump could win. Just a lot of people, especially in the national media, did a poor job interpreting that data. All right, we're going to take a break and come on back with some local news. We'll talk about Ivanka Trump's visit to Minnesota and more up next on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Did you know there's deconstruction funding available now for homeowners and contractors in Hennepin County? If you are embarking on a remodel or teardown this year, consider hiring Better Futures Minnesota's deconstruction crews instead of demolition. By taking a house or building apart by hand instead of destroying it with heavy equipment, the materials can be reused or recycled instead of going into the landfill. It is much more cost-effective and is a carbon-neutral solution. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under Business Services to learn more.
Hi, this is Laura. Listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Our individual health is connected to the health of each other, and connected to the health of the earth. We know the problems with the dominant food system, climate change, deadening soils, nitrates in the water, factory farming, injustice, concentration of wealth. How do we both as individuals and as a community step up and support a living food system which honors the earth? Tune to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. and remember to support your independent farmers.
Hello, it's Keith Ellison. I'm voting for Ilhan Omar in the upcoming DFL primary because she shows up for the community. When they tried to take our vote away or interfere with our right to marry who we love, Ilhan stepped up and urged everybody to vote no twice. When Trump announced his Muslim ban, Ilhan Omar organized thousands of Minnesotans to stand up and say no. Everybody's welcome in Minnesota. When COVID-19 hit, Ilhan passed the Meals Act, guaranteeing school meals for all of our district students and 20 million students nationwide. She raised over $300,000 to support local organizations. Now, we need to show up for Ilhan. Go to dfl.org and get your ballot. Vote early at your county office or vote in person on August 11th.
I'm Ilhan Omar, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Ilhan for Congress. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the most informative source for progressive politics and news in the Twin Cities. Get involved online at am950radio.com, where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, check out the local businesses that help make this content available, and stay up to date on the latest news and upcoming events. You can always reach us by email at comment@am950radio.com. That's comment@am950radio.com. Thanks for listening.
Hazel's Northeast is back and offering some of the most creatively prepared comfort food you'll find. Delicious breakfast options include the slow-cooked brisket hash, chicken fried steak, and the famed drunken banana French toast. Or for lunch and dinner, there's Swedish meatballs, wild rice gumbo, and more. Hazel's Northeast is open Wednesdays through Saturdays, 8 to 8, and Sundays, 9 to 2. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family-owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis. Make your reservation now at hazelsne2go.com.
I have no idea where you guys, as producers, find that stupid track from The Apprentice. I didn't put it on my playlist, but you and Sam somehow always find that thing just to troll me. Where on earth do you guys find that song?
It's right here in the playlist. You can come check it out after the show.
Did I really, like, do a Freudian slip and put that in our playlist?
Somebody did.
I don't know. All right. Well, we'll blame Sam since he's not here to defend himself. But do appreciate that there, Patrick. I ran late on that last segment talking about polling of 2016 versus 2020, so we'll save the Ivanka talk for the next segment. But just going back to the polling thing again, because this kind of annoys me when people say the polls were wrong in 2016 and no one saw Trump winning. Nope, the data was there showing he can win. And just again, look at that RCP polling average of 2016. You can see those three or four instances during the spring and summer of 2016 where Trump a few times was able to poll even with Hillary Clinton, showing that he very much had the ability to narrow the race, which of course he eventually did on Election Day of 2016. While here in 2020, we have not quite seen what we saw back in 2016, where the polls would narrow every once in a while. 2020, that hasn't really occurred, as Biden, for the most part, has been able to hold a consistent and rather wide lead. But as I brought up, it would only take a shift of a few percentage points to put Trump back in the range where he could still win the Electoral College but lose the national popular vote by a substantial margin. In fact, estimates show that it's anywhere from like 4 or 5 percentage points where you can lose the popular vote but still win the Electoral College. So don't get too comfortable, even though Biden has that very wide and consistent lead, because it won't take much of a shift to put Donald Trump back in the range. And by the way, if Trump does end up winning re-election in 2020, we're going to have the data to show it. It'll be there in the polls. I'm still someone who largely does trust the polling data, because it was right in 2016. All right, let's briefly touch on this local Minnesota story before we head to break. Patrick, you're probably familiar with this. This is all over the newscasts of how the mask mandate went into effect over the weekend. And we had a couple, I believe a 59-year-old woman and 64-year-old man. Actually, I think I have that in reverse. I think the woman was 64 and the man was 59. They showed up at, was it a Walmart with those swastika masks?
Yeah, it was a Walmart in southwestern Minnesota.
Yeah, so they showed up at a Walmart, and they were protesting the fact that we have a mask mandate, and they thought the best way to protest was to show up by having a mask with a swastika on it. Which, logically think that through, that doesn't really make any sense. Because you would think if you truly believe that a mask mandate is oppressive and somehow similar to what the Nazis did back in Germany in the 1930s and the 1940s, wouldn't you instead like be putting a Star of David on your mask instead of a swastika? Wouldn't you be trying to represent those who were oppressed rather than the oppressors? I mean, if you just logically think about that, it makes no sense as to why, if you're protesting having to wear a mask, why you would put a swastika on your mask, of all things. And then there's this little thing. Who exactly at home just has a swastika cloth laying around their house? I mean, this was well planned out, I think, for at least several months. But yeah, that I just don't get why you would be protesting in that way if you truly feel that a mask mandate is infringing on your liberties. You're kind of going about it in the wrong way. All right, let's take a break. Come on back with more local news, and we'll talk more about what happened with Ivanka Trump here in Minnesota, including making a pretty meaningless token gesture towards supporting missing and murdered indigenous women. Robert Pilot has some information on that, on why it was pretty much a meaningless gesture from Ivanka and the Trump campaign. We'll talk about that and more up next here on FYI Politics.
Hi, I'm Frank Brown, owner of the only minority-owned union print shop in Minnesota.
Do you work with political campaigns?
Yes, we have years of experience helping campaigns.
Do you print remit envelopes for political campaigns?
Yes, we print everything.
I know you do mailers, but do you also mail them out?
Yes, we do mail them out. We print everything. Choose the only minority-owned union print shop in Minnesota for all your political campaign needs. Learn more at mpuptown.com. Minuteman Press Uptown. We print everything.
Crooner's Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooner's is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
Hi, this is Paul Metza, inviting you to listen to the Wall of Power Radio Hour every weekend on AM 950. We are on at 6 p.m. on Saturday, 4 p.m. on Sunday. We feature artists, musicians, raconteurs, private detectives, and more. 6 p.m. Saturday night on AM 950.
Wall of Power Radio
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much to all the AM 950 listeners who've become members of the radio station. The pandemic has hit our economy hard, and your generous support has helped ensure Progressive Radio stays on the air in Minneapolis, St. Paul. With this upcoming election, it's vitally important to make sure a progressive voice is an option in Minnesota. If you're interested in becoming a member, head over to our webpage, AM950radio.com, and click on the membership link. It's really easy to sign up, and you can either make a one-time donation or become a sustaining member with either a monthly or quarterly donation option. And your membership comes with the added bonus of special members-only content. We have brand new interviews with great guests like national host Tom Hartman, politicians and authors. We also revisit classic interviews with new perspectives. These are interviews only available to the members. Once again, go to am950radio.com and sign up to become a member today. Thanks for helping keep the station on the air, and thanks for listening to AM 950.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming, diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 82. Tonight, clear with a low around 63. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 84. And Wednesday, sunny with a high around 83.
Don't miss the Longevity Expo this Saturday only at the Maple Grove Community Center. See up to 150 exhibitors. Find all the resources to help you live a longer, healthier, and more active lifestyle. This Saturday only at the Maple Grove Community Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
You know, after the show here, Patrick, I gotta run to the store, but I don't have a mask with me. Oh, you know what? There's my Nazi mask. I'll go ahead and wear that to the store. I mean, who honestly sits there and thinks, well, I don't have any other masks, so let's grab that Nazi one over there that just happens to be sitting around.
Maybe you just want to go to the customer service desk and buy one for a dollar in this
situation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pick up your Nazi mask over at the store. Good Lord. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Ivanka Trump visiting Minnesota today. This morning she was in Duluth, and I believe she just left Bloomington, so we are no longer being graced with the presence of Ivanka Trump, who really hasn't accomplished anything in her life. Yeah, I know that sounds harsh, but go ahead and look at her professional history. There's really not a whole lot there. So she started the day in Duluth. And she was there to watch Duluth PAX owner Tom Sega sign the White House's Pledge to America's Workers, which is a workforce training initiative that's, well, pretty much about as meaningless as that title. Much of the training that's part of the Pledge to America Workers would have been done in the absence of Ivanka's initiative, some companies say, and the program sets few standards for employers to meet and carries no repercussions if they fall short. The initiative, by the way, has no federal funding whatsoever, has tried to help the Trump campaign make clear that he considers employee training the responsibility of the private sector. So yeah, it's an unfunded mandate, in other words, this Pledge to American Workers. There is no teeth to enforcing this thing, and there's no federal funding for the mandate either. Yeah, it's just a political ploy. Now, what's more significant of what's happened in Duluth is that this company called Duluth PAC has a Facebook page. And as you can probably imagine, it was inundated with negative comments and negative reviews when it was reported that Ivanka was going to be visiting this site. Now, here's what I would think. Whether you think people should be posting negative reviews of this company or not, because I can actually kind of see that. If you have a visit from someone within the administration, maybe you take that visit. But no matter what, though, from the company's perspective, you do have to kind of think of it this way. Is it really worth all of those negative reviews and that negative press that you're getting on your social media and your website just to get a photo op with Ivanka Trump? I'm guessing that's probably not the case. By the way, she also did not take any questions at this Duluth visit. That's according to Jim Loverin of the Duluth News Tribune, as he said that he and other outlets on the Iron Range and in northeastern Minnesota planned on asking Ivanka a number of questions during today's visit, but she left without taking any media questions. So that's at least the Duluth part of the visit. But going back to this business, Duluth PAC, yeah, they're taking some negative reviews right now on social media and their website. They're probably also fielding phone calls saying, why are you welcoming a member of the Trump campaign? But I don't know, if I'm sitting there as a business owner, I don't think that's really worth the risk if I'm only going to be getting a visit from Ivanka Trump. I mean, maybe if it was the president or the vice president, even if I disagree with them, you would still take that visit just to say, hey, I had a president visit my business. But Ivanka Trump, she's the daughter of the president who has really no professional accomplishments, including the fact that her little fancy handbag company actually outsourced labor to China and Indonesia and still failed in 2018. That's really about her only professional accomplishment. But I don't know, if you're sitting there as a business owner, Patrick, I don't think I would really take that risk of just getting a visit from the daughter of a president rather than the president himself. I don't think that's worth the risk as a business owner.
No, if you don't mind me stealing the floor for a second, I want to offer a little bit of more irony about this. So Ivanka's landlord is the CEO of Antofagasta, which is a Chilean mining company, and they're invested in the Twin Metals mine, which they've been fighting to build outside of Ely. And for those of you who may not know what the Duluth Pack is, it's an outdoors outfitter store. And so if this mine is built, it actually would directly hurt the Duluth Pack's business because the environment of the Boundary Waters would be damaged.
Yeah, that's a very solid point. That's something that people miss when we're talking about, yeah, the Twin Metals Mine or PolyMet or Line 3, all of these different very environmentally unfriendly proposals that are working their way through northern Minnesota. Yeah, if these things end up getting built and they have an environmental disaster, which almost every time they do, guess what sector that hits? Tourism. That's a big part of the economy in northern Minnesota. If you gut the tourism economy, yeah, you've basically got nothing. That is a very good point to bring out. Yeah, I wasn't quite familiar with Duluth Pack. I know you went to school kind of up in that area. They're a rather big business up there. And as you said, you gut the tourism industry, there goes Duluth Pack. But hey, I guess they got their little photo op with Ivanka. All right, so in the second half of her trip, she visited Bloomington, Minnesota, and I believe Robert just texted me saying she has already left, so no more chances to see Ivanka. But what she was highlighting in her visit to Minnesota was the opening of the first missing and murdered Native Americans cold case office, which on the surface sounds like a pretty harmless thing, in fact, a good thing, since we have, not only in this state, but all over the country, an epidemic of Native American women and girls who do go missing and oftentimes murdered, and these cases often go without it being solved whatsoever. It's a huge, huge problem. Robert Pilot's talked about that a number of times on his Native Roots shows, a number of those that you can hear on AM 950, including Saturdays from 1 till 3, Wednesdays from 5 until 6 with Pilot's Progressives Party, and then, of course, tomorrow, the debut of the 2 to 3 p.m. show, Rock the Vote Native Style. So he's been on this issue for a long, long time, and what he told me, along with Mary Kunesh Podine, who, of course, serves in the Minnesota legislature and someone who's been very involved with this movement of trying to prevent missing and murdered Native American girls from, well, going cold on their cases, they didn't receive any news that this was going to be happening. In fact, this is the tweet from Mary Kunesh Podine, who, again, has been on the real forefront of this movement for missing and murdered Native American women. Last night, she tweeted, "My phone started to blow up with news. Minnesota is set to open the first missing and murdered Native American cold case office. Wow. Only no one told me. The author and chair of Minnesota's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Task Force. No one told our task force members or our leaders that Trump was going to be opening this new office." And that's also despite the fact that in the past, Trump tried to cut tribal nations out of COVID-19 relief funding. And now, of course, they held that news conference in Bloomington. Yeah, so the people who are actually involved with missing and murdered Indigenous women weren't even included at all with what was happening with the opening of this new office, which leads me to believe it's more of a token and kind of meaningless gesture that's really not going to lead to any action whatsoever. One final thing to point out with Ivanka's visit. Again, look at her history of accomplishments and what she's done with her professional life. Really not a whole lot. And just sit here and imagine for a second that we were in a parallel world where Hillary Clinton had been elected in 2016. Can you imagine how the media would be reacting if Chelsea Clinton held a prominent position in a Clinton administration? Imagine if you had Chelsea Clinton sitting in on intelligence briefings and holding prestigious positions within the cabinet and being involved with the inner workings of the White House. It would be the scandal of, well, the first term of Hillary Clinton. In fact, I would imagine she would probably be impeached over that matter. By the way, not saying I'm a big fan of Hillary Clinton. I'm just pointing out the case of where we're at right now politically. If we had Chelsea Clinton doing and holding the same sorts of positions that Ivanka Trump is holding right now, this would lead to probably the political scandal of the century. But just because we have scandal after scandal after scandal with the Trump administration, it sometimes gets lost. It gets overwhelming with the amount of scandals that we have. Very similar to what we saw with the Bush administration back in the 2000s. The Republican Party of Minnesota, moving on to some other news, has been criticized after posting pictures of a campaign event that they were holding at Madden's Resort, basically showing nobody wearing face masks and no social distancing taking place whatsoever. This took place on the day that the mask mandate went into effect. The pictures show GOP Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd, and U.S. Representatives Jim Hagedorn and Pete Stauber speaking to a room where no face masks are being worn or social distancing being observed. In fact, the only people that were notably wearing masks and obeying social distancing were the employees of Madden's Resort, not any of the attendees or the speakers. Now, I point this out because Jim Hagedorn, who attended this, who is the congressman in Minnesota's 1st Congressional District, is the husband of the GOP chair, Jennifer Carnahan. And Jim Hagedorn also is currently going through stage 4 kidney cancer. And this guy's not wearing a mask at all at these types of events. Just think about that for a second. We have a sitting congressman who was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer, who very likely has a compromised immune system, and here he is speaking at a tightly packed room with no one obeying social distancing or face masks. I kind of wish Hagedorn the best because for someone who is going through the types of health challenges that he is, that is a very, very dangerous thing to be doing. By the way, one final note with Jim Hagedorn. He, of course, is running for re-election in CD1 against Dan Feehan. And this has finally been picked up by some southern Minnesota news outlets. It's something I talked about last week. The odd amount of expenditures that Hagedorn is making on behalf of his office from taxpayer money. So just to recap on this, each Congress member gets a certain stipend of money that they can use to spend on, well, basic office supplies or office duties or mailers or communicating with their constituents. It's a stipend that you can use that comes from taxpayer money. But the odd part about Hagedorn is that he has already spent almost half of his allotted budget during the first quarter of the year, $570,000. And 20% of that money was spent for franked mail. Now, if you're not familiar with what franked mail is, it's basically a way to send out campaign mailers to your constituents, but disguise it as saying, well, I'm just communicating as the congressman, not on behalf of actually campaigning. Franked campaigning, or franked mailing, by the way, isn't necessarily legal, but it's very, very unethical. And he spent about 20% of his budget already on franked mailers. Now, what's significant is that that's nearly 25 times higher than the next highest member of Congress. So he's spending a whole lot of money on mailers, and I imagine this probably isn't the type of mailing that's just talking about what he's been doing in Congress. This is probably really campaign mailing. So this was finally pointed out by several southern Minnesota news outlets, including the Mankato Free Press and the Rochester Post Bulletin, which of course are in the 1st Congressional District. His DFL opponent Dan Feehan has been highlighting that as well. Let's take one final break and come on back with a few more miscellaneous stories. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Hi, I'm Alicia Luther-Toms, Certified Financial Planner with RBC Wealth Management. You might think you have to give up performance to invest responsibly, but that simply isn't true. Responsible investing can actually have a positive impact on performance. We will work with you to come up with a strategy that matches your values. This is Alicia Luther-Toms at 612-770-4460 or alicia.luther.toms@rbc.com.
RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Join us for New Beginnings, Saturday mornings at 11, brought to you in part by Vision Loss Resources.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for more than 25 years. My company has been awarded more than 5 national awards for craftsmanship. You won't find somebody who loves their job more than me. I've devoted my life to my family, my craft, my business, and to the people who trust me with their projects. And I'm happier for doing it. Visit NICK, slavik.com to learn more.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pini Gigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is having its annual store-wide sale. For the entire month of July, all of our indoor and outdoor fireplace products and accessories are at their lowest price of the year. At Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we display, explain, and install the Twin Cities' most diverse selection of indoor and outdoor stoves and fireplaces, including metal and masonry pizza ovens.
As a Minnesota native, I know I cannot change the weather. How I experience the weather, that is my choice. I have an energy-efficient wood stove from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Having a fire makes Minnesota so much warmer. Having a wood stove means more than low heating bills. The heat is moist, the view mesmerizing. Our wood stove improves the mood of winter. It warms our heart as well as our home.
Come see us. We have over 35 working displays in our store, which is just off I-94 at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, since 1977, out of the ordinary products and services to make fire work for you.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. By the way, fingers crossed for tomorrow. Ilhan Omar is expected to join us tomorrow at 2:30, as we were able to get that interview rescheduled, as Robert Pilot and I will be interviewing her coming up tomorrow at 2:30. Hopefully nothing changes if they get a floor vote scheduled, but that is the tentative plan. So make sure you tune in for that on the debut show of FYI Politics Presents Rock the Vote Native Style, as Robert and I are going to be hosting that show coming up tomorrow from 2 until 3 p.m. on AM 950, with Ilhan Omar joining us coming up at 2:30 if things go according to plan. All right, let's get to a few rapid-fire stories before we wrap things up today. Trouble in paradise with the Minnesota Republican caucus. It's some friction between the Republican senators and the Republican House members. This, a tweet from Representative Pat Garofalo, a Republican House member. He tweeted, quote, "In Minnesota, if the Senate GOP wants a bonding bill more than making reforms to Governor Tim Walz's never-ending emergency powers, then that is what will happen. But you can't expect House Republicans to fight alone when Senate Republicans won't back us up." Ooh, a little infighting there between the Senate House and the Senate GOP. Also some news from Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka in the state Senate. He recently tweeted, "Protesters, moms, dads, school kids were outside the governor's mansion demanding schools open up this fall." If I look at the pictures, there really weren't that many people demonstrating, but we'll continue. He tweeted, "Our kids' future depends on a good education. The teachers' union is wrong. We can open up schools and keep teachers and kids safe. Our future depends on it." Now, he's referring to a recent survey that was done by teachers that are part of Education Minnesota, where they overwhelmingly said we need to have at least distance learning, which means, well, teaching remotely, or at the very least, a hybrid system. So on that, yeah, I'm probably going to be siding with the teachers rather than a politician in terms of whether schools should reopen. Tonight, the Minneapolis Charter Commission is listening to public testimony on the Charter Commission's own proposal to, I won't say defund, but reform the police department. I don't have time to get into it with much detail, but basically the Minneapolis Charter Commission, which is an unelected body, there are 15 community members that were appointed by a judge, and they have to give their stamp of the approval on what the city council voted to do to defund the police. Instead, what happened, the Charter Commission came up with their own watered-down proposal, and they are holding hearings tonight on what will happen with their police reform measure. And I use that term intentionally because both the Charter Commission's proposal and the Minneapolis City Council's proposal don't really defund or abolish the police. It's more of a police reform type of bill. But if you're a Minneapolis resident, you can chime in on that tonight with the Minneapolis Charter Commission and their own amendment that they are proposing. Let's go to some national news now. So this is significant in an idea that's being floated by Senate Republicans in the U.S. Senate and supported by the president. This is a measure that would temporarily slash the weekly federal boost to unemployment benefits from $600 to $200 until states can develop a capacity to implement a more complex system that would pay laid-off workers 70% of what they earned prior to losing their job. So what this does is that everyone has their unemployment benefits, their extended unemployment benefits, cut from $600 to $200. And in the meantime, the states are supposed to somehow come up with a system in which they would pay laid-off workers 70% of their salaries before they lost their jobs. Now, there's some problems with this because analysts warn that replacing the flat $600 a week payment with an individualized benefit would overwhelm antiquated state unemployment insurance systems, which, by the way, in many states have gone underfunded for many years, potentially causing massive relief delays for millions of people that are on the brink of financial collapse. That's according to a memo that was presented to Congress last week by the National Association of State Workforce Agencies. These are the agencies, by the way, that issue state unemployment checks. And they're saying that if we were to switch to this type of system, it would take anywhere from 8 to 20 weeks to switch to a type of system where workers would be paid 70% of their wages prior to when they lost their job. So that would be a significant gap of at least 8 to 20 weeks where people would be getting a $400 cut to their unemployment benefits. And that, of course, has a significant impact on people who have recently lost their jobs, especially when you consider that what the unemployment rate is hovering around 11%, although I got a feeling it's a lot higher than that. And let's see, let's get to one final story before we wrap things up today. Let's go to this one right here. Important thing pointed out by Patrick Coulican over in the Minnesota Reformer about voting this year in 2020 that could make some interesting results in college towns like St. Cloud and Northfield. Points out that one thing to consider in the race for the legislation, are districts that have college campuses and what impact a modified attendance system could have on those types of districts. If you think about like St. Cloud and Northfield, which are big college towns and of course have a number of college students voting, if they are not attending classes in person, that could actually have a benefit for Republicans coming up this fall. All right, I am just about out of time for my show today. Again, make sure you stay tuned for tomorrow, as at 2:30 we are planning on having Ilhan Omar on the show, so definitely look forward to that. Matt McNeil is coming up next here on AM 950.